I'm David Abram. I'm a cultural ecologist and a philosopher, what some call a geophilosopher. That is somebody who thinks and reflects and is working out the ways of thinking under the influence of a more than human earth. It seems to me that earth is the real life from whence each of us was born. And at the moment of death, we begin to fold outward and spread back into that wider life, which is also a wider sentience.
I think it's interesting to think about the way that the way that different parts of yourself will die at different rates. So if someone were to shoot you in the head, you would die. But then the other parts of you would continue to live for different amounts of time. Some of the organs might continue to work for a little bit. And so the cells that make you up could stay living and continue to do that at different rates. So death would be this... this a process rather than a single instant, even though the moments that the big dramatic moment for one's coherent, integrated, a psycho-spiritual self, one might think of that as happening at an instant. So then the microbes that make you up, the microbes that support your growth and behavior that have helped you develop and allowed and created the conditions for you to be able to live, they then start to decompose you. It's a bit like this with plants as well. Plants contain fungi that can live within them for their whole lives, playing innocuous roles, so housekeeping roles. But when they die, these fungi they become fungi that then rot down the plant and then make a home in the rotting log and have a whole other life after the tree itself has died. And it's a little like that with the microbes that live in us. So we think of decomposition as happening in one site where we die, but actually parts of us can be carried sometimes quite far. Even if a vulture doesn't come and eat you, if you're buried in the ground, then worms and carrion beetles, flies come and lay their eggs, and maggots would start to eat you and then come and turn into flies and take that that part of you elsewhere. So there's a process of dissipation, spreading out. And it's a reminder that there's a lot of energy that it takes to keep ourselves together. And when that energy is not there, then we dissipate entropically. And so there's animals, there's the microbial action from the inside, there's the microbial action from the outside, there are the animals. And then as the nutrients, the stuff of your body, the proteins, all of the things that make you up, the fats, the carbohydrates, everything, starts to be broken down. And as some of the animals that have been eating you start to die as well, leaving their bodies at the site, it becomes a whole new ecosystem. And actually, there's something called cadaver decomposition islands. So the bodies of the animals that have been eating us, the bodies of the microbes that have been eating us, because they die too, and the chemicals that have made us up are released and are broken. A lot of this breaking down happens by fungi. And then these fungi are, because they form living networks, they're able, which is one of their great adaptations. When a fungus absorbs something, it doesn't just stay in one place, it travels through the network. And some of these fungi will be fungi that form mycorrhizal relationships with plants and exist in a trading relationship with plants, and the plants will be supplying energy containing carbon compounds to the fungi, and in return the fungi will be supplying nutrients like nitrogen or phosphorus to the plant, and will create the conditions for plants to grow and to photosynthesize, and again can create the conditions for the plants to, you know, whatever grows must die, and so create the conditions for plants to die as well, themselves then becoming another body. So I think it's quite helpful to think about all the bodies that are allowed to form off the basis of your body decomposing, because all those bodies will then decompose as well. So I like thinking about those interfaces, the places where where nutrients move from one place to another, and they move from a dying thing into a living thing.
There's lots of reasons why a fungus might die. So fungi, like any living organism, they're not infinite. They don't live forever. I guess it depends on what you define as being an individual fungus. Like, it's really difficult to define an individual, particular filamentous organisms like fungi, because they can fuse, they grow for miles, they can recycle hyphae, they change shape and everything all the time. And I guess that's not something that's available to some sorts of organisms that have a defined body, where, like, yeah, you have a barrier to the outside world almost. I guess that's why where it's different, where a fungus would just cease a part of its mycelia and just recycle that and then grow in a different direction. That's not necessarily an option that's available to, for instance, animals, which have this determinate growth, we call it, and it's a set pattern of growth and development. And once you hit that, it stops. Whereas some things like plants or fungi, they have this indeterminate growth where they change what their body plan's going to be according to environmental conditions or what's available at the time. When a fungus dies, I don't know really. I don't know whether it would be, you could have like an old age death of the entire organism, or whether it's just a series of sort of turnover events where individual hypha die off and get turned over in the soil by other microorganisms.
My body begins to spread out into the body of the land as my breath spreads into the body of the atmosphere. If I or someone is cremated, then there's not just the ash that is fed to the soil and the aspects of breath that spread into the air, but some departs as flame and is fed to the sun and to the stars. That is, I spread back out there in that field, and my life is taken up within the wider life of the breathing land.
Who am I in all of this? The way I understand it at the moment is that I'm a temporary... I have a psyche. There's a psyche here. And there is a lot going on in this psyche. And it definitely has a unique character of myself, which is, you could call my identity as Stephen Harding. But there's much, much more going on there, which is beyond my identity as Stephen Harding. And yet all of this intense psyche with its, you know, its deep symbols, deep in the unconscious and the dream world that we have, and inspirations that come to us, you know, snatches of music, poetry, mathematical equations, all of those things are somehow linked to those carbon atoms that have once been in the atmosphere, and to those nitrogen atoms and phosphorus atoms and sulfur atoms who similarly have been in parts of our mother's body, Gaia. So that must be who I am in that case, you see. It's sort of a combination of Gaia's atoms that have formed themselves into this sentience called me. And they're quite happy for this sentience to be called me. There's no need to try and obliterate it. But then eventually, this being, this Gaian being, this me whose skin is made out of these atoms from my mother's body, you know, that being will have to go back into my mother's body. Those atoms will have to go back. And maybe when they go back, each little atom will carry a little savor of who I was, who this Stefan was, just as it carries little savor of all the other beings it's been in over the evolutionary history of our mother planet, and probably every single other human being. You see, if you take the notion that psyche is everywhere, then all of this follows in some way. Why should we think that psyche is everywhere? Because it obliterates the problem of thinking. Well, it obliterates what they call in science the problem of the mind. Where does the mind come from? It can't be in matter, because matter is just dead molecules. Therefore, where does it come from? It can't come from some spiritual space, because there is no spirit and there is no soul. So, crikey, this is really a mind-body problem. This is really a problem for science. Real problem. They're really stuck on that one. And the answer is pretty simple. The psyche is there from the start, in matter. Now, what that means is very deep, to experience that. But I think the intellect can be quite happy with that solution. When I feel that, I don't feel that all the time, but when I do, oh God, I feel I'm really at home on this planet. And my fear of death disappears. Because, when you die, you're actually, maybe all of you will get dispersed throughout the whole of Gaia. Maybe you'll have somewhere, there'll be an experience of the whole of Gaia when you die, and her atoms that she'd lent you go back into her body. She lends you these atoms so you can see her. You can be conscious of her. And then that's only temporary, because everything must change, Like Heraclitus said, everything flows. And so then you have to be ready to let those atoms of yours go back into Gaia, into your mother's body.
For me, the idea that your body and organic stuff becomes recycled and becomes part of the landscape, for me, that's quite a powerful thought. And I think, I don't know, I find that as like the most comforting thought. I don't think that there is an afterlife. I don't think that you sort of go anywhere. I think you decompose and then your elements get recycled and incorporated into soil and into microbes, into trees, into fungi. I think that's for me, that's a very comforting thought.
This is one in a series of four podcasts exploring the science and ideas behind Marshmallow Laserfeast's artworks. You've just heard from Professor Katie J. Field, Dr. Stefan Harding, Dr. David Abram, and Dr. Merlin Sheldrake. You can find more information about the scientists and the rest of the podcasts by visiting Marshmallow Laserfeast, Works of Nature, on the Acme website.